This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All this time, Porter, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
Cast. I am Pete. I am joined by Johnny. Johnny, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome. Man, we're going to be looking at WCCW, Episode 10, February 27th, 1982. Before we get into that, man, deep sorrows and our condolences go out to the Heenan family, losing one of the great ones in Bobby Heenan, who, man, he barely anyone's ever said a bad word about the guy. Always fully, everyone's always, and if you had a problem with him, you always respected him. And a guy who, if someone wanted to tell me they thought he was the greatest worker of all time, I would have no problem with that statement. Do you have any great Bobby Heenan memories or anything
you want to talk about? Well, real quick. There's my memory about when I met Bobby Heenan, but anyone who wants to read that, because it's a little long, you just go to Pro Wrestling Only or DVDVR and the Bobby Heenan thread, and it's in there. Yeah. So to what you said, when I look at it and I look at the business as what it is, if you want to say the most talented performer ever in professional wrestling, yes, because all around, because as we've seen, he was a great wrestler. Yeah, he was an amazing wrestler.
And not just talented, but for a guy who could put it all together, I mean,
But what I mean by is that this is entertainment. This is entertainment. You put together the body of his career, what he did, and he would always make that point with the Heenan family that he's not retired, that I am a wrestler. I just prefer to win with my smarts. You know, he had that little thing. And so you want to talk about the funniest, the quickest wit, the most amazing comedic performer, but who could also turn it on and be serious. And the art of managing, you know, the ringside part of it and everything. It's no one was better than him at this form of entertainment.
Totally agree. Like him and Bockwinkel were always my favorite 1-2 combination of all time, I think, when it came to manager or a wrestler combo. And but I mean, don't discount his WWF run, because besides Hogan, I thought he was the most important figure in that 1984 to, or 1985 to 1988 era, where he was just the Hogan's foil, you know. I mean, Hogan, of course, he had all the managers were his foils, but Heenan was the foil, where, I mean, he's the one who got Andre to turn and just would have one challenger after the other. Like, Heenan's always was like the A group of the stables and stuff. And I mean,
It's not a stable. It's a family. It's a family. As he would have told you.
Right, you're absolutely right. He's like,
these aren't animals. These are horses. This is my family.
Right.
Okerlund.
And he was such a great foil, and the payoffs to his either the weasel suit gimmick match or him taking a gigantic bump or him bleeding like a motherfucker, it was incredible. A very strong promo. Obviously he was on all of our Mount Rushmores when we did managers. I mean, deservedly so. I mean, the guy was absolutely incredible. And then even when he transitioned into commentating, one of my favorite things was two things for his WCW run. was that even when Hogan turned heel, he was still Bobby Heenan's arch enemy. And Heenan was like, I told you, people, I loved how he stayed in character, and that he never went off character when it came to his dislike for Hogan, because he never showed admiration for the guy and all that. And the other thing was, I enjoyed how important he really was, and whether he was able to still come in 1986, come and manage, not manage, but coach, Flair and Arn against, Kevin Green and Steve McMichael, and kind of helped pop a buy rate. He was part of the package, and his coming out of retirement in a way,
Is that the one where Mongo joins the Horsemen?
Yep.
Oh, that was, I thought Savage was their coach.
No, it was Bobby Heenan was, yeah, Savage was their coach, with the Babyface's coach.
Oh, and he was coach.
And he was Flair and Arn's coach. Yeah, he wasn't going to coach that dummy McMichael.
I was just like, what?
Yeah, and I just liked how he was able, the package, and he was part of that package, was able to pop a buy rate, because he was coming back and working the apron.
Here's one of my favorite things real quick for you, because we could talk about Bobby Heenan. We all do a Heenan show. But the WWF, I mean, his promos and everything, I mean, he just owns it. Because it's like this. He'd been calling for years because he wanted out of the AWA. He fucking hated it there. And because of what we know from Titans, you got three wise men and there's no more spots. Then within the course of just a couple of years, Ernie Roth dies and Blassie's pretty much wrapped it up. And Albano's still there for a while because he refuses to be fired, you know, but, and he comes in at his opportunity with, and Jimmy Hart, but he comes in and he takes the mantle of the top fucking guy amongst the managers when the managers of the WWF were just as important as anybody else. But real quick, the WCW thing that had me laughing the most, and I just watched it again, is the worldwide jobber match with Duggan and some jobber. And Heenan laughs throughout the entire match. And a lot of people think like, he was laughing so hard that he could barely get anything out. No, this was his choice. This was his comedic choice. Because Schiavone says something about Duggan being smart, and he just bursts into hysterics. And every time it goes to him, he just cackles more at anything Schiavone says. Schiavone is barely holding it together. And then at some point, Schiavone mentions that Duggan played college ball. And then the only word you've heard for a while is just college. And it's a comedic choice to do that on just a throwaway, you know, it's worldwide back then. No one's watching worldwide. Yeah. And he chose, I'm just going to laugh through this whole thing. That's my choice. And it's brilliant comedy. It's brilliant. Of course, it ends really good. We're going to call Duggan over here. And he's like, calming down. He was tremendous.
Yeah, always a guy. You should always, if you want to catch up, watch his AWA stuff. Watch his early WWF stuff. That's where he's at his prime. And he always would still.
And him and Monsoon.
Yeah, him and Monsoon in prime time, they're firing Bobby Heenan angle, and I mean it was a shoot angle, and then they you throw him out, and he's stealing toilet paper. I mean, it's just still, you know, he knew his character, and he was never afraid to look like an ass. That's what made it great.
Yeah, I saw one little clip where they're doing some bit or skit. And as he's leaving the set, he purposely bumps into the scenery and just sells it just a little, like, oh, and like he's trying to make a graceful exit and does this, and he doesn't do it over the top. He makes it look real. He is probably the most gifted comedic entertainer ever in professional wrestling. Everyone said if he had chosen to go into comedy, he would have been a legend.
He could have been Jack Ritter. I mean, John Ritter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but even just any sort of performance. He even said that in his Hall of Fame. He's like, I found wrestling. I fell in love with it as a kid, but it was also a way for me to use my comedy. Yeah. He always saw himself as a comedian. And one last thing, and I read this, as far as his comic timing and just and his wit, there at one of those Legends Hall of Fame things, not the ones like you went to, Cauliflower Alley, I believe it was. And he's standing with someone else, they're both in tuxedos, and he's like, hey, we look like the top of Pat Patterson's wedding cake. And Pat's there laughing. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's just awesome. I'm glad I got a chance to meet him late in his career, because he's just a legend, and you'll be sorely missed, man. Often imitated, never duplicated. A guy who easily could have been a vaudeville, could have been a mega star back then, and he could have done whatever he wanted. He chose wrestling, and he.
Well, vaudeville was dead in the 30s, so.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If he was alive, if he was back then, I said right. If he was back then, yeah.
But wrestling is the modern. The wrestling is the modern vaudeville. So there you
go. He could have done anything he wanted. Just incredible timing. He easily could have been a game show host. I could easily see him doing Family Feud.
him doing Family Feud, insulting all the families.
Yep, there's a different spin on it. Just a great guy. But yeah, don't underestimate his drawing power and how important he was for the WWF machine and being that major foil. Because man, these managers, people don't remember, man. Because the managers is kind of an distinct gig nowadays. But man, they were the ones who carried the real true heat, okay? And were the ones who were the true draw. They were the real foil, because they're the ones out there cutting the promos. And man, no one really did it better than Bobby Heenan. That's why always just one of the great ones, man. Bobby, you'll be missed, buddy. Okay. On to the main episode of WCCW, episode 10. Gene Goodson is gone, and we have Mark Lawrence in, and he's with Kevin Von Erich. What do you think of these? What do you think about these two?
Well, it's just I don't know if it's a Stockholm syndrome, but the music, this weird music for the opener is starting to grow on me. I don't think that's a good sign. Lawrence says, he's like, I'm standing in for Gene Goodson tonight. And I'm looking at him, and boy, they didn't hire a good makeup person, or because Lawrence always had that sunken eye look, like like a ghoul, the big dark circles in his eyes. But here it's amazingly, when Percy Pringle was changing into Paul Bearer in WWF and he was doing his makeup, he was trying to get it just right. He's like, I'll go full Lawrence. That's what he looks like.
All right.
And Kevin's just hanging.
Yeah, Kevin, I know, it doesn't feel like he wants to be there at all.
No.
But he has a job to do. And we get opens up with Bugsy McGraw versus Jesse Rimpongo Leon. And, I enjoyed the early part of the match. It was some fun cat and mouse stuff. I thought Leon was a lot of fun here, but once McGraw took over, it became kind of really didn't, it didn't help the match. But Leon really had been one of the better workers on these early WCCW shows. And it's a shame he really never really broke out and became a star, but he looks like a guy. I mean, obviously he lacked charisma, but he seemed like a pretty damn good, solid worker who could have done a little. He could have been worked a little higher on the card, but the match really kind of fell apart once McGraw took over. Any thoughts here?
Oh yeah, a lot. Not on the match.
there you go.
Well, I mean, yeah, the match was fine. I like Bugsy. He had his half shirt on and his green tie dye tights. I dig that look in his top hat. Mark make sure to pronounce Leon's name. The full name on a number of occasions.
Oh, Kevin butchered it.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, here's because Gene Goodson could never get it right. And he's, because exactly, he's filling in for Jamie. Like, you know, like you said, he'll be back later. You know, he's on vacation. And he's like, okay, I'll show you. You know, and he rolls it right off his tongue a few times. But he does get a great line of or was it Kevin who calls fucking Leon Speedy Gonzalez? And you just cringe, like, and speaking of Kevin, he has this astute observation about Bugsy McGraw. He's like, oh, this McGraw guy, you know, it's like he's always on a head trip. Oh, yeah, you know. A head trip. It's something, if Lieutenant Joe Friday had said that on Dragnet, you know, it'd sound like, you know, these kids on their head trips. But Kevin, with his Kevin voice, he was like, yeah, man, he's on a head trip. I enjoyed that. Let me see here. Oh, this great call. There'll be an interesting outcome to this match before it's over. Oh, okay. Really bringing the heat there. They call it a flying Mexican tackle. It's just a flying tackle. They call it a flying Mexican tackle. It was a good tackle, too. You know, he was very good, like you said. Bugsy hits a fucking superfly splash that looks like a murder, given he's got a giant gut. You know,
yeah.
He ain't, you know, he's saving his old knees. But my favorite was, and I don't know how long this guy is going to be around. Probably not too long, given the example of Gene. But our ring announcer, Joe Ranelli, holy shit. He's
around for a while.
Is he? He's awful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was around for quite a while in WCCW.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. He, the good, because I get him. My first one, I'm like, Joe Ranelli in Texas, this guy? Like, this guy was in the witness protection program, and now he's blowing it by going on TV doing ring announcing. But, yeah, that's all there was to that.
There we go. And that leads us over to a King Kong Bundy and Gary Hart interview. What do you think about this bad boy? I thought Gary Hart is so great on the stick, and man, and he's so awesome. What, any deep thoughts here?
No. We were talking earlier about, like you know, the previous show. We're like, you know what? Coming up soon is going to be Bundy. And because I guess the skip ahead, we're like, oh, there it is. Wow. Yeah. For us, it seems like he arrived and it happened. And good.
Yeah, we got the episodes. The missing episodes are where he did his actual turn. So,
And it's great because Hart references the promo, like you pointed out when we talked about Bundy's promo. You pointed out that Bundy made sure to get in the middle of all this. All shucks, I'm here to work hard. Blah blah blah. That he likes to make money. And Gary Hart is apparently listening to what all the wrestlers are saying in their interviews because he's that fucking good and well prepared. Because that's his point. He's like, I heard that, and this is a man who likes to make money. Do you think Fritz Von Erich cared about Bundy? You know, got him all dressed up like a farmer. I'm like, fucking A. Yes. You know, exactly. We talked about that. And then it goes to Bundy, and Bundy's good. Bundy's got he's got a lot of personality. He's fired up.
Got a fire.
I just wrote down, like, because he's jive talking to Gary, is, you know, baby. And I just wrote down, Hart is awesome, baby. This was good. This was good stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because he's younger than the Von Erich brothers at this point, Bundy. And he seems like such a blows all of them away on the stick already. And, you know, everyone says how good the Von Erichs were young. Bundy, I thought, looks like a way better package than all three of them, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, you gotta figure out the time. That's out of our eyes. But out of the time, you think of those muscles. Because remember, the muscles were...
Oh, yeah.
How many people to this day still like, King Kong Bundy, he sucked. Why? Well, he was fat. Yeah, well, you got to get out of that mindset because you're the same people that thought the Von Erichs were awesome at this time.
Yeah, and I mean, the difference also is, he's obviously not a heartthrob like the Von Erichs, so yeah, it doesn't have that going for him. But when it comes to promos, he's a better promo. Working-wise, I think they're all pretty much on. I think Bundy might be better than a couple of them.
Although, to be fair, As soon as this happened, Bundy went on to quickly be in main events all over the rest of the territory. Oh, yeah. So yeah, you know, I guess I'll.
Oh yeah. He was here in Memphis and Mid-South and then WWF, you know. Yeah. I mean, the guy, yeah, he was a good draw from like 80, pretty solid draw from 82 to 86, you know. Don't underestimate his drawing power. And that leads us to this Al Madrill versus Frank Dusik match. And it's really disgusting to see how over Al Madrill is as a babyface because he's not good looking. I don't think he's Mexican. So he doesn't have that ethnic thing going.
Wait a minute. What is he then?
Sure. I don't know. I thought he was like, I don't know. He might be Spanish.
Well, of course he is.
Yeah, he's gotta be. Okay.
He's Irish. Al Madrill. He looks like an extra from every Cheech and Chong movie. Of course he's.
Yeah. And it's just so weird to see him as a babyface because he's always been a, most of the time I've seen him, he's a heel. So it's just here to see him over and over as a face in this territory. That's how bad these baby faces are right now that we have. When Al Madrill is like the most over baby face besides that doesn't have the Von Erich name attached to him.
Maybe that's why he stuck around, man. He was a company man. Like when all those motherfuckers jumped Fritz to go work for Bill Watts and UWF, you know, right. Al Madrill said, I'm going to stick behind here, and it's my chance to shine.
And then we got, I like Dusik's wobbly selling to match. It's really nothing much to it. What are any, let's hear some commentary.
Oh, I got a few things. By the way, now Frank Dusik likes titles because he's Crippler Captain Frank Dusik. He's Captain of the Cripplers, I guess, or I don't know. But he likes alliteration and two nicknames, which I kind of like. Joe Manelli's back, and I'm like, hey, it's F. Murray Abraham in the Joe Manelli story. Because he looks like F. Murray Abraham. Anyway, Bill Chauncey's at ringside, and Dusik goes to slip him a foreign object that he carried into the ring, and now he's slipping it out to Bill. So everyone could see it, and I'm like, what is that? It just looked long, skinny, and black. And apparently, when it does come into play later, I swear I saw a little white tip. I'm like, is that a magic wand from a children's magic set? It's certainly what it looks like. It's exactly what it looked like. It was crazy. Looking around in the crowd, far more African-Americans in the crowd than what we will see in just a few years when it becomes redneck gentrified.
Yeah.
And it's fucking.
It becomes redneck and the farmer's daughters.
Those chicks, dude. It becomes the rocking place to go. Gets probably ticket prices go up. And it's all about what we know.
And they run those damn cheap beers, those dollar beers or quarter beers or whatever the hell they're doing.
Quarter beer nights?
Yeah. There's a lot of feta, but there's quite a lot of. A lot of bastard childs being born back then.
Well, Steve Austin always tells a story about like when he was in college, him and his buddies would go down there and get fucked up and throw beer wrestlers and shit. That's how we had fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did like the punch exchange with the hair pulling that was going on because I was like, that's really good improvised acting, basically, or wrestling, whatever you want. These are two guys. They don't go over this. They just know how to do this, and they just start improvising how this goes. And I was like, "Oh, that's impressive." And that's about it. I didn't think this was awful. I didn't think it was great, but I like seeing Frank Dusik work. I enjoy seeing the man do the wrestling. So there you go.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's a weird thing to say, but yeah, he had that, had fun bumps, the punch exchange. He was a good basic worker who was entertaining, but he lacked charisma. On that note, why don't we take a break and, we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're back, and we open it up with this Fritz Von Erich interview. Well, I mean, he's talking about the 20% loss of his eye vision. Uh-huh. I thought the earlier TV they were saying was 30%.
32.
Okay, now the numbers have changed. Uh-huh. Take it from here, Johnny.
Lion son of a bitch. He's not even fucking hurt. He can't even get his fucking story straight. This line's cocksucker. Fucker. Yeah, we're going to get into fucking the rest of the show. There's some fuck the Von Erichs going on for me. And that's from not a backstage anything, but if I'm watching this as a fan, you know, especially if I was at the age at this time, I'd be like, I'm totally on Gary Hart and Bundy's side. I would totally be on their side, especially after hearing shit like this. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, 32? I thought it was 32. It's 20 now? Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm sure. You know, you're faking for sympathy, you old cocksucker. He starts talking about Bundy. We're out of the blue now. It's, you know, who's this young, great young prospect guy. And he's like, oh, we didn't even want anything. We didn't even want anything to do with him. He forced his way into the business. He just forced his way into the business. Oh, ooh, really? Fuck you. Fuck you, but forced his way into this. Look, it's King Kong fucking Bundy. Of course, if he did, good.
I like how you're reverting to Johnny Sorrow, 16-year-old, who you're cheering for the heels here in the promotion.
Yeah, but this was one of the... This here? No, I would cheer for the heels because I like dastardly shit and all that in my entertainment. But if I was this age, this would be about me around 13, 12, where I still was like, some of it's fake, but some of it's real. I would have been on Bundy's side here completely, not because of any wanting to cheer bag guys. And then he goes to talking about Gary Hart. And he's rolling with it. You know, I'll give Fritz a little credit on delivery here. He's like, it's been very personal for you. It's been personal for 20 years. You know, and it's not going to end until I get him in. And he stuffs himself because he realizes he's about to say, get him in the ring. And that ain't happening. And he has to come up with something else that doesn't really quite work. You know, he sort of saves it. He almost, it's interesting. Fritz Von Erich, he owns the fucking place. He can say whatever the fuck he wants. He gets to that one point, like by Gary Hart, and he stops himself in the middle of it because he, you know, like you said, the relationship between the two of them at the time, you know, Gary Hart, he's like, don't you promise them that because it ain't going to fucking happen. And then right. Fritz looks like an asshole. Yeah, so fuck Fritz. And again, this is just forced his way into the business. We'll hear about how well they treated him when Kevin starts describing.
Then we get El Negro Assassin versus King Kong Bundy. This mm-hmm. is absolutely nothing for me. El Negro Assassin, arguably one of the worst workers that I've seen in a while. He's not good. It's terrible.
Yeah,
from stinks. Work to the gimmick, I mean, everything about him is terrible. Does nothing for me. Anything, it was like, yeah, he stinks. Fair enough. Do we need to spend any more time on this?
Oh, no, of course we do, because we got some cool shit that...
go for it.
So you got Kevin Von Erich's on commentary, and he's all like, I don't understand what happened with Bundy. You know, like, oh, I thought we were friends. I took him fishing, and I took him hunting. Fuck you. Oh, you took him fishing, you fucking hunting. He came to learn how to be a fucking professional wrestling star, not fucking do field and stream. This guy's from Atlantic City, New Jersey, you asshole. No. Go fuck yourself. You're fishing and hunting. Uh-huh. Yeah. I want to be a big star wrestler. Well, we're going to dress you up like a hillbilly and say you're from Alaska when you're clearly not. You know, really? Thanks for all the help? You know, forced his way in. But then we got our ring announcer, Minnelli. He introduces Gary Hart. He says, the Playboy manager, Gary Hart. Ugh, no. The manager, Playboy Gary Hart. And then he announces as Big Daddy Bundy and Hart. And it's hard to say whether or not that was planned and Hart wanted that plan so he could get on the microphone and say in front of the crowd, that's, you know, it's King Kong, which is what he does. Or else he saved this guy, you know, and was legitimately mad that he couldn't remember that. You know, it's one of the two. Again, Gary Hart is awesome. Either way. And the whole thing, they get to talk about, like, well, all he's about is money. Why is wanting money in your chosen profession wrong? Why is this a wrong thing amongst the Von Erichs here? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I know everyone here on this thing come up evaluation time. They sure hell want to get paid extra money.
Yeah, you know, like, I can't understand why he's all about money. Really? You really? Because what's easy for you to say is the top stars in your daddy's fucking show, you know? Okay. Again, I'm kayfabing because it's clear. Everyone knows. This is not Vince McMahon as an announcer, but we all kind of know that he owns the place. It's clear who the boss of this is. It's Fritz. Everyone knows this. And, yeah. That's it. It's just, I mean, I like seeing Young Bundy, but a Negro Assassin is terrible.
Terrible. Agreed. And a waste of Bundy. And like the tropes we've been getting on the announcing side, either be an angle or a match, and somehow they get rid of the final announcer come main event time. And uh-huh. Here it is. We get him out of the booth because he's wrestling. He's wrestling while Bill Irwin. Mm-hmm. And they have a good, solid meat and potatoes match. Nothing incredible or anything. Just solid. And that's probably being that stretching it because it really wasn't that good. But while Bill Irwin's a good worker, a good, solid worker, Kevin's a good, solid worker, and here they have a good, hard-hitting match. Nothing blow away, but nothing to be embarrassed by. What were your thoughts here and any other intangibles you want to talk about?
Well, it's, you know, given the match, it's fine. But and you get figured, given the state of like, oh, this is your main event at that time. What are you used to? It's probably pretty good through the eyes of what you've been seeing.
Yeah.
But Minnelli now at this camera angle, he looks like Fredo from The Godfather. So yeah, I'm not as long. I'm gonna have a million of these. And then he introduces Bill Irwin as just Bill Irwin, and then fucking Dusik has to go over and say, it's Wild Bill Irwin. Oh, Wild, sorry. I was like, is this his gimmick? Or is he this awful?
Yeah, and they go with the Chauncey shit again, which is fucking terrible. But,
yeah.
You know, you know, it's funny, because, like, Paula for Paul Orndorff was awesome chant. Chauncey sucked. I mean, but Chauncey, basically they're doing the same thing in a way.
You know, I got to tell you, though. When I was a kid and I'd see that, I loved it because I loved how mad Orndorff got. And he was so good. But I thought Paula was a stupid insult. And like, Paula? Really? That's what getting you up? I don't get it. Why is that?
I mean, the insult's not great. But maybe it's the fact that how Orndorff sold it made it so fucking work.
It's all how Orndorff sold it, because it's not good. Now, Chauncey is even worse because it's. With Paula, there's the implication, are you calling me a girl's name? I'm not no queer. It's just Paula, it's not. But Chauncey? No.
But then again, some of these, like, you know, when they'd call Michael, hey, sissy prissy, I mean, that sucks.
Sissy, it did.
But he sold it great and played it
sissy
up.
Sissy prissy,
yeah, again.
Hey, he's a sissy, yeah.
It's all about the presentation.
Well, they got to be on... They're airing generally right after cartoons on children's television.
This is true. So
you know, okay. So we got Lorenz without Kevin there, and Kevin's wrestling, and he says, you know, when I see Kevin in the ring performing, I can't help but think about Fritz and Kabuki. Really? Holy shit. Wow. Get your skinny nose out of his fucking ass. You got the job, okay?
And not even a good segue.
Then he's, Kevin, you know, it ends, the bad guys run away, and Kevin gets on the microphone. And he's like, you come in here and take your lickings, turkey. And again, yes. There are children in the audience. And Kevin, is trying to use his fucking, nepotism and stuff to restart a match that is officially over. It's over. There was a definite decision. There was a DQ or whatever the fuck it was. And, it's like, no, I want a three count. You know, like, I need the pinfall.
Right.
it's ridiculous. And then as we always get the promise to the match that you might get if we run out of time with our main event. They never really brought it up, and they get to the end. It's like, well, we wanted to bring you Zapata versus Kerry Von Erich, but, oh, well, you know, it's too bad. Like, is it really too bad?
Is it too bad? I know.
Is it really?
I'm sure that match will air eventually. It'll pop up somehow.
You sound very excited for it.
I'm confident it will show up eventually.
Oh, good.
Man, again, you know, Gary Hart has got to be the standout on this episode. Everybody else.
Of course. Who else? I mean,
you know, when we're really grasping for straws and we're happy to see Frank Dusik work, we know we're in trouble.
I'm actually going, I'm admiring that Frank Dusik is quite the. Now, that's when they use the term mechanic, that's what that means. I'm looking at it through that eye, and when I'm doing that watching wrestling, you know it's not good.
Yeah, I always thought Stone Cold underestimated himself by calling himself a mechanic in the WCW days.
It's one of the strangest things when he talks about that, because I have such fond memories of stunning Steve Austin in WCW, but again, it's our perspective from their perspective as the performers here, and I see what he means.
Yeah, I do now, but I still, at the time, I felt... I mean, especially because he had the aftermags of Steamboat putting him over as a future world champion. I always thought Stone Cold...
Oh, you had the aftermags.
I always thought he was champ, but it just happened in the WWE.
Well, the aftermags were putting him over. The aftermags were putting him over from Chris Adams.
Chris Adams feud, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Dean was on the cover for that shit and winning one of those Verkata awards for Feud of the Year or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, or Rookie of the... I mean, from that eye, yeah, you're like, of course. And then he seemed like a breath of fresh air in a stagnant WCW right at a time where a lot of cool shit happened. But that's a fan's perspective and not a worker's perspective.
Yeah, exactly, obviously, because he does not put it over very well. But
he always is surprising to hear, though.
Yeah, you know. And so that's that. Again, Kelly is on his honeymoon in Italy, having a great time, eating some probably some veal parmesan or pizza.
Really? Really? You think in Italy that's what they eat?
Him and his woman are doing the Lady and the Tramp thing at the cafe.
You're like that episode of The Sopranos where they go to Italy and Pauly Walnuts can't figure out why they don't. Why, where's the pasta? Where's the spaghetti? He's like, no, they don't eat that. It's fish.
John, you got anything you got to plug, brother?
No.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. CWF FanCon, October 13th and 14th. Come on down. I mean, sorry. Yeah, 13th and 14th. Come on down. Follow them on Twitter at FanCon, at CWF FanCon, has all the information. I'll be there performing a podcast, great wrestling, Trevor Lee defending his title in the Rumble going for us, so I'm assuming he might be starting, I don't know. It sounds exciting, I can't wait to see it live. It'll be my first time going there, and I'm super excited. If you want to come on down, look at all the information, I'll be there. We're going to have a hell of a time, so come on down.
Where's it being held?
In North Carolina, at CWF Mid-Atlantic, Mid-Tour, the arena.
Oh, cool.
Yep, and we'll be on Friday. There'll be a meet and greet with wrestlers, and there's going to be a buffet, a catered dinner at the Sportatorium, and then Saturday will be the wrestling. And along with some other stuff throughout the day to keep people entertained, and some wrestling viewing parties. There's going to be the Hub at the Ramada, so I'll be sure to be plenty of drinking, plenty of talking of wrestling, and meet some of your favorite wrestlers from CWF, and it'll be a great time, man. On that note, have a great week, everybody. Later.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance on and on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Across Texas with you in my arms, waltz across Texas with you, like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.